Pickaxe.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.
Hello, friends, lovers, well-wishers, haters, baggers, and the infirm. Welcome to...
Yes, especially the infirm. Welcome, welcome. Do be welcome.
Do be welcome indeed.
Please sit down. You're looking very tired.
Take some weight off your leg and have a sit down.
All right. Would you like a cup of tea? Why, yes, that is one of my Lalique. Was it? No, what am I thinking of? Hummel. What am I thinking of?
Hummel figurine.
Hummel.
Hummels. Yes, they are my Hummels. Hummels?
Hummels.
No, there's a word for them.
For what?
Hummels. But in England, we don't call them that. We call them something else.
A Hummel figurine?
Yes.
Hummel figurines. A series of porcelain figures based on the drawings of Maria Innocentia Hummel.
Yeah, but the cheap ones made in Spain and Italy are the ones that we have in the UK.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they're like little fairy boys or like holding like a candle.
Cupids?
Kind of.
Hummel figurines.
This is the mailbag. We're supposed to know stuff.
No, this is intriguing. Rip off.
I don't know much stuff.
Well, actually, there's a bunch of rip-offs in the UK as well. I was in Tewkesbury the other day, which has a nice like abbey.
The heck were you doing there?
We were just visiting for the day out for Mother's Day.
Oh, right.
And British Mother's Day. Don't panic, American listeners.
I know all about it.
And it was a lovely day. And we happened to walk around an antique shop. And it's amazing. They're tat from another world. The stuff that's in there, you know, clocks and a whole cupboard full of stopwatches and things like this. Before people had phones, they had to have tons of shit. Right?
Yeah.
And this was like that on display. You know,
the thing that always amazes me about places like that is when you go into them with somebody and they're like, wow, look at this. And you're like, yeah, wow, that is such a piece of shit. Like, I would never buy that. Like, I always find it unbelievable that people buy stuff from those places, you know?
Well, I wonder how they do a trade as well. But I think they just have so much, though. And the problem is there's so much that the people running it clearly don't have time to even sort it out because, you know, you're walking through and you see like,
yeah, it's a mess.
I think it's, well, my mum said it was, it's, she said, what they have, people die and all their shit gets like shoved into the here, you know? Because it's just a mishmash of nonsense.
There are dumps that you can go to as well. It's probably quicker to unload it all there too.
That's what I said. I said, this stuff in here is slightly more valuable than just taking it to the dump. So it's stuff that's worth like 15 quid, you know, or 10 quid. It's like stuff that like, if it was worth less than that, you know, like this framed picture of a Matrix poster, you know, with like a limited edition film. You know, it's got a limited edition, like 999 of 12,000, you know, and it's, you know, it's like, and it's like faded a bit in the sun. And it's in a crappy frame and it's got like a £40 price tag on it. And you're like, ugh, you know, even if I was like a collector of Matrix stuff, would I want this, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, next to like a Chinese kind of monkey puzzle wood box, you know, or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's
classic.
Like,
yeah.
So it's basically, you know, stuff that is just on the wrong side of the good bad spectrum to be considered not quite trash yet.
Yes.
Like, it's this, like, is just not garbage.
It's just nearly
now.
Trash.
Yeah. It's so close to just being just toss it.
It's on the cusp.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really teetering.
And I think that's what most antique shops are, right?
It's like, a lot of crap.
Yes, there are some genuine antiques, but I think the word antique has a certain gravitas to it, right? And it sounds like it should be good, right? You know, an antique should be have value and be ancient and, you know, show the past and be almost like rare. You can't get more of them. But some of these things, this technically a Jurassic Park limited edition poster is an antique, but it can also be crap.
Is that an antique? I would say that's just a collector's item now. Like, it's not that old. And like you're talking like maybe something from like the Victorian era is an antique now, I would say. You know what I mean? Something from 1990 is not an antique yet. Like, there's no way. I think for it to be an antique, it's got to be like at least 80 years old, I'm going to say.
Well, I think there are rules, but this shop did not listen to those rules.
Right.
There was everything in there.
Yeah.
From a literal wooden packing crate that was painted white, you know, like a bric-a-brac. It's kind of, I guess that's what it is. It's not antiques, is it? You're right.
You wouldn't call like an iPhone 11 an antique. You know, it's not old enough. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't even call like an iPod Nano an antique yet. Like, they're... You know what I mean? They're just not, it's not old enough. Jurassic Park stuff can't be an antique just yet, in my opinion. I think it's too young. It's got like 80 years. I think about 80 years should be, there's probably like a guideline for this stuff somewhere, you know?
Yes.
If only there was some resource that I could use to find out.
Well, here's the thing. Ladro, that's what it's called. LLADRO. It's a Spanish company. They're still going, but for the last sort of, well, one of the biggest things they make is these porcelain figurines.
Right.
And they're what I consider Hummels to be, you know. But there's a couple of knockoff Ladros, because obviously, you know, there's, your grandma doesn't want to buy a small child holding a candle next to a goat, you know, for 60
occult.
Pounds.
It sounds like something occult related.
Yeah.
Definitely. But they do modern ones. It's like a Grogu Ladro figurine. Do you know what I mean?
Grogu,
they have
again?
Like branded ones.
Grogu is the baby Yoda from The Mandalorian.
Right. That little shit.
I'll put it in chat and you can have a look. But this is what
I was called
about.
Grogu?
Yes.
Yes, I know.
Fucking Grogu? That's
it was either that or Grego. So I mean.
that's such a weird name.
It is a weird name, you're right.
Well, they had to call him something. They couldn't just keep calling him Baby Yoda.
Yeah,
true. They did have to call him. They did have to call him something, yeah.
Tony. Just call him Tony. It's a classic name.
Dave.
Go on. Well, give me your... Give me a mailbag.
Hit him with a mail.
All right, baby.
He's ready.
I keep talking about going around this antique shop. It was mental.
This is about the D&D wizard tropes thing that I mentioned, where I said I felt that the wizards in Dungeons & Dragons were the nerds that made D&D made sure that the wizards were very powerful, the most powerful. Just because they couldn't pick something up didn't make them powerful.
Yes.
So... recently you mentioned wizards being frail in D&D, despite Gandalf being a badass. As a hobbyist historian on the matter, I'd like to share some context you might find interesting. Besides game balance, which you discussed, the other reason why early D&D wizards were frail and didn't much resemble Gandalf is because the creators were more interested in the sword and sorcery genre of pulp fantasy, where magic users are often depicted as villains relying on the occult for power, while the heroes used strength and wits, e.g. Conan the Barbarian. Appendix N of the first Dungeon Master's Guide, titled Inspirational and Educational Reading, has 28 authors listed, including J.R. Tolkien, but it's noted there that the most influential to the creators were, I don't know what these mean, Lion Sprague Ducamp, Fletcher Pratt, Robert E. Howard, Jack Vance, H.P. Lovecraft, Abraham Merritt, and Fritz Lieber. I don't know any of these, I'm sorry, apart from Lovecraft.
Well, Robert E. Howard is the guy who did Conan.
Oh,
right?
I see. Who's Lion Sprague Ducamp? I've got to look
that
up.
He must be a famous,
let's say author.
Writer.
Yes, I know, but I'm saying, who the hell is he? Like, he wrote science
Sprague
fiction.
Ducamp.
You could just look him up.
Use
the World Wide Web.
I have. He wrote things like...
He coined the phrase...
No hits?
Extraterrestrial.
Wow.
Did he?
Yeah.
So he's like a pretty big deal. I mean, extraterrestrial, that's a famous word. That's a famous
term.
Right.
You're absolutely right. And he wrote these light fantasy kind of poppy poppy sort of thing. There's one of the ones called Land of Unreason, 1942, a kind of adult fantasy.
Oh, goodness.
Here's the plot. Do you want to
Les Simpsons, which was then, of course, adapted into The Simpsons.
Fred Barber, an American staying as a guest in an English country home during World War II, consumes a bowl of milk left as an offering for the fairies, leaving behind liquor in its place.
Nice.
The rightful recipient of the offering gets drunk and is offended at the substitution, takes vengeance by kidnapping Barbara off to the land of fairies as a changeling, a fate normally reserved for infants. Okay, he finds Fairy beset by a menace, echoing the war in his own world, trapped in a magical realm where rationality is turned upside down. He undertakes a quest in the service of the Fairy King to be returned to his own world.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, it's classic
drug-fueled literature,
classic old school fantasy strangeness.
Yes, you know?
Yeah. But obviously, like, coming in the footsteps of Alice in Wonderland and Narnia and these other things, you know, that were much older, I guess, than this, right?
Yes.
Which were always very prevalent in culture, right? When you think of fantasy, you do have to think of like these early. Actually, was Narnia before? Was it after? Around the same time. Anyway, whatever. Yeah, Tolkien was around the same time, I imagine, as well, after, like, post-war.
Mm.
Hmm, that was like the founding, I guess, of modern fantasy world. So I guess that was why D&D was there.
Yeah.
It has to be something familiar to people, right? When you've got your players, they have to have a world which they've already read the books about.
Yeah, yeah. Gosh, it just reminded me of the name El Prague du Camp reminded me for some reason of Tarnsmen of Gore by John Norman. Have you ever heard of the Gore novels?
No.
Yeah.
So they got talked about on Something Awful quite a lot back in the day.
Right.
Because there's like a subculture around them. So Gore, G-O-R, and this guy, John Norman, he basically wrote these really trashy pulp sci-fi books about... They were called Sword and Planet novels.
Right.
In that it's like sort of low-tech-ish, in that there's a lot of sword fighting and stuff like that, but on exotic alien planets. And also, Sword and Planet is also known as planetary romance, in that they're quite often, for some reason, a bit saucy. So Tarnsmen of Gore...
I think Tarnsmen of Gore was... problematically saucy.
Right. Oh, no. I'm coming to that. I'm not going to say that Gore is fine. Anyway, the whole point of Gore was that it depicted women as slaves of men. And all the women in the Gore novels are submissive. And it's very clear that John Norman was just really into BDSM, where he was like the male dom and he had submissive, women partaking in BDSM with him. That's pretty much what all the books were.
Right.
And he fucking made 38 of these. It's insane.
Wow.
Tarnsmen of Gore, Outlaw of Gore, Priest Kings of Gore, Nomads of Gore, and so on. Slave Girl of Gore, Savages of Gore. Like, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. Yeah, he wrote a fucking ton of these books. Gore. And
you gotta admire people that, like, they're so passionate about something that they'll just keep doing it regardless of whether it works or not. You know, like, you hear about these authors that wrote like 20 books and none of them did well commercially. Right. But then later, you know, somebody discovers them and they're like, wow, these are amazing. But the person is long dead or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, how do you have the motivation to just keep writing this stuff? Like, I feel like you'd want to.
This. Well, the reason why is because it's porn. Like, this is, he says, the first several books are passable exercises of Edgar Rice Burroughs-style fiction, while later volumes degenerate into extremely sexist, sadomasochistic pornography involving the ritual humiliation of women, and as a result have caused widespread offense.
That's a bit like this podcast, really, isn't it?
Yes.
Early episodes, we just talked about sniffing flowers.
Just can't help it. I hate women. They drive me nuts. Here on the Jeez.
Fantasy author Michael Moorcock says that Gore novels should be placed on the top shelves, stating, "I'm not for any form of censorship, but I am for strategies that marginalize things that work to objectify women and suggest women enjoy being beaten."
Wow.
This is a common thing in this stuff. I mean, I read the Terry Goodkind Sword of Truth series when I was in school, when I was in secondary school, because, you know, this was what happened. These books were in the school library, and they are sword and
you
sorcery.
You had porn books
and,
in your school library?
Well, they definitely
some top
do.
Shelfers?
He well again, like one of the things I'm sure I've used to talk about this before, but Goodkind has it. Like he must be into BDSM or something because he is routinely subjecting his female leads to some form of sexual violence, which is not very cool.
No.
And I did find it a little bit kind of sexy and erotic when I was a kid, but also in a way that was like kind of unpleasant.
Right.
I don't know. Joey, there wasn't a lot of, I wasn't
expecting
it, I guess.
Like you felt dirty. You got horny, but you felt bad and dirty about it.
Well, it was a strange source of pornography to discover when I was, you know, 14 years old in the school library. There was like all this, all these books that have sex in them, you know, but they're in like a kind of a strange section of the, you know.
Yes.
We were very starved for this, but back in the day before the internet. It's a different world, right?
Yeah.
I only had Microsoft Encarta. Type in boobs into that and it didn't show you anything, you know. It was not the same.
Yeah, it was rough. It was rough. Oh, by the way, do you remember we talked about the North Sentinelese Island ages ago?
Sure.
On the podcast?
Yes, that's the one where it's the only, they throw spears at helicopters.
Yeah,
yes.
You cannot go there, right? On Thursday, Indian police arrested a US tourist who had sneaked onto the highly restricted island carrying a coconut and a can of Diet Coke.
Oh my God.
That's what he
Is
had.
Is that the only thing he'd carried?
Apparently that was two of the things he had and they nicked him. I mean, the main thing that we're not letting people go there is because A, they're going to get killed by the North Sentinelese people, and B, they might kill all the North Sentinelese people with whatever diseases they've got. These guys live in completely isolated conditions. You go over there and give them COVID, they're all fucked.
Well, precisely. I feel like we've seen enough news of people going there and getting, you know, killed for it. It's not like, you know, that the last time someone was land, but I think a lot of these people see it as a challenge, you know, or like the last guy was a missionary, wasn't he? And he wanted to, you know, spread the word of Jesus to them to save them. You know?
Did it work?
And I know he died. They killed him.
Right.
Excellent.
So no message received.
Excellent.
Weird.
Yes. Yeah.
Weird that
it was
that
a
happened.
Total failure.
Yeah.
It is weird. Yeah.
Right. All right. This is from Andy. Sorry for the slightly inappropriate question. I'll try to keep it as civil as possible. While watching a recent Yogscast members video where Lewis and Boba were joking about fanny packs, I was suddenly struck by a thought. Do British women use the slang term fanny in intimate situations? For example, and he has then removed on grounds of good taste the example, so I'll do it. Oh yeah, stick that big cock right up my fanny might be an example.
It's not impossible.
It's pretty common. Yeah. Right? It's pretty common for American women to use pussy in certain situations, but the thought of someone using the term fanny in the heat of passion seems ridiculous and quite funny. I feel ashamed, but my curiosity and relentless quest for the truth have overridden my common sense. All right.
Yeah.
Listen, I think it's unlikely to happen north of Leicester, right? south of Leicester. Like, it's definitely a more northern thing, right? You could imagine some...
They're a lot more prudish in the south. They would say something different.
From some lass from Hull might let that one out. Oh, you know,
yes, pop it in my foof is what we would say.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Right, south of, But it's definitely a more northern term, and I think these days not so much. But I think you could definitely see it if you wanted to.
Alan, ravish me with your tallywhacker. That's what they would say. That's what they'd say in the south. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
But up north, they'd be like, hey up. Hey, pop it in my fanny.
Yeah. Get it right, it's almost funny there. Like, get it up that fanny. Oh, get that big knob out. Pop it up my fanny. There's a reason British porn hasn't really taken off on the internet.
That's dead nice, that is.
Oh, yeah. Give us that jizz all over me fucking tits.
Yeah, but I find all porn talk ridiculously cringe. Like, I don't even know how people, you know, people talk about like, oh yeah, you know, we're dirty pillow talk and stuff. Like, why are you doing that? Like, don't do that.
Just shut up.
Just fucking shut up and get on with it. We don't need
shut up and get on with it.
We don't need the play-by-play either. Thanks. Like, it's
I prefer to be perfectly silent. That's right. Yes.
Completely silent. Yeah. With like a couple of muffled maybe you groans, could ask, maybe.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Once, there you go. Are you okay, dear?
Everything all right now, dear?
I'll get on with it.
Yes, darling, carry on. Putting it right up one's fanny. Yeah, no, I don't think I've ever heard it used, really. I mean, being a southerner, it's not super common.
No.
We call it clunge down south.
Right. No, you're right.
Yes, that is the common term for it.
That is the common term, medical term. Well, madam, yes. We've looked at your scans. They've come back, and the specialist says your clunge is infected.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I live way more south than both of you, and I can tell you that down here, they go in big for vajazzle.
Vajazzle.
Yes.
Do they?
Yes. Yes.
You don't go for like a hoo-ha a rah-rah or anything like that?
A rah-rah. Like, No, I can't say I've ever heard of it be referred to as a rah-rah.
I mean, yeah, but if someone said she exposed her rah-rah, I'd know what you meant.
Exactly.
Like, it just has to be any slightly twee phrase is the sort of polite version of Lady Garden, for example, you know, anything like that. Anyway, all right, this is...
Thank you for writing in.
Yeah, cheers.
Yeah,
thanks so much
for that.
Becca. I found a topic I could chip in on after the Gordon Ramsay bingo discussion. I work as a chef in Sweden, moved here from California in 2020, and I've been working in kitchens for the last 10 years. While I have no intention of defending the concept of fresh frozen, as mentioned often on Kitchen Nightmares, I think there is a general lack of awareness of the freezing practices in restaurants. I am speaking from my own experience in broad terms. There will, of course, be exceptions. Freezing foods is incredibly common in restaurants, generally with the help of vacuum sealing to retain quality. Food is often prepared in bulk as a time-saving measure. Your comment, literally making something and using it for the whole week, is exactly what happens in most restaurants. Things that take a long time to cook are often made at the beginning of the week and used throughout. So long as it tastes fine and you, the chef, would eat it, it's acceptable to serve. That kind of thing can't be done with fresh burger meat or fish, for example. Most places are cooking in bulk and reheating. It's just how most restaurants work.
Sorry.
What is going on in the background?
There's like some shouting or something. Someone talking.
People yelling.
It's just people outside. It might not come up in the episode, but if you're listening to this in a tranquil moonlit glade,
and you can hear some Twickenhamites arguing in the background, our sincerest apologies. They are animals.
I imagine it will get processed out in the.
Yeah, I mean, that's
an incredibly boring email. Thank you, Rebecca.
Basically,
you're saying that.
Oh,
she's making excuses.
She's saying that just to save time, we do cook stuff in advance. We just put it in a little bag and seal it.
Listen to this. Make our own sausage in-house and prepare enough to last several weeks because it's very time-consuming. We make the sausage, vacuum seal it, and then freeze those bags. What do you think? Should they make fresh sausages every day?
How is that different to freezing like something at a factory and then delivering it to you the week later? Like, there's no difference. Like, just because you made it, like,
so you're not,
it's not
happy.
Freshly cooked, is it? It's gone in the fridge. The whole point of this,
yeah,
and Gordon Ramsay's whole point is that it's gone into the freezer and come back out of the freezer, which changes it.
Mm.
You know?
Oh, I'm with
Am
you.
Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy.
You're right. No, yeah.
But I will
I think
say
stuff
that
has been frozen and unfrozen is different. It just is, right?
I guess. I will say that I've frozen sausages before, and when they come out of the freezer, they're fine.
They're basically the same.
I've made bolognese, and then we freeze the bolognese portions, and then we reheat it later, and it tastes the same. Like, there are just things that you can freeze, as long as you don't leave it there in a shabby way, just boshed in the freezer.
So are you
up.
Saying, hang on, is the point of this email that there's no problem with stuff being fresh frozen at all, and Gordon's wrong? Or is the point of it that, in fact, it's that some fresh frozen stuff is fine, or is no fresh frozen fine? I don't understand.
Of it is that we were talking about the whole fresh frozen thing, and Becca's contention.
So Gordon's wrong.
No, Becca's contention is that a lot of restaurants do that because they wouldn't be able to do it otherwise.
Take it up with Gordon. This is right into him, not us. What are you telling us for?
He's not as accessible as we are. That's why. He's busy. gosh. He would just ignore that email. We see, we're listening. We listen. That's why, you know, you should watch our cooking show instead. It's more accessible.
Apologies for that outburst.
Rebecca is making excuses for freezing all of her food because it sounds like restaurants actually have to do it in order to function. Well, it sounds like a reasonable thing to do then, but Gordon doesn't think so. So maybe buck your ideas up, Rebecca, and maybe cook some stuff fresh. And it's fucking raw. So, you know, all that.
Yeah. Rebecca, geez. Oh,
gosh.
Jeez.
Anyway, next.
Okay, yeah. I'm just reeling from that Lulu outburst. It always sets me back. So I was actually reading an article about Amazon Prime the other day. I don't think we talked about it on the podcast, that about 67% of people in America have Amazon Prime, the ones that use Amazon.
Yeah.
About 67% have Prime.
Right.
But that a lot of the time, the cost of things that you buy when you're logged in on a Prime account are higher than when you are logged in on a regular account. Like you pay for Prime, and then in addition, they stick the prices up for you.
I see.
Which is quite interesting. So Stump has emailed in, The Great Amazon Prime Conspiracy, starring ads and my sanity. So I'm in the car with my girlfriend, Mailbag 52 playing, and Lewis goes full rant mode about Amazon Prime showing ads. And I once again cannot stress the look me and my partner shot each other. A moment of pure connection between myself and Lewis forged through shared outrage. Why? Because every single word Lewis uttered was like an echo of my own inner monologue. Watching Invincible or Clarkson's Farm, other shows are available, has become an exercise in rage management. The ads continue to make my blood boil. Here's why. It's not even the existence of the ads. No, it's the conspiracy of it all. Flashback to a few years ago. There I am, blissful in my ad-free Prime world, believing in the promise of uninterrupted streaming. Fast forward today, and what do I get? Ads. And what's worse, I'm paying more now than then thanks to inflation. Meanwhile, my girlfriend just doesn't get it. She's over there scrolling TikTok during the ads, saying they're fine, they don't bother anyone, but they do bother me. They're squeezing every drop of revenue out of me for a service that half the time has nothing worth watching. Amen.
Jeez. Me.
Whew. This is just a rant-fueled mess of a podcast.
I think we got to understand that the world out there, they don't care about us. They just want to extract as much money as possible, and they will only stop when they start falling apart. It's like Disney putting all their prices up and doing less and less. You know, they're going to use up all their goodwill eventually. But until that point, they can just make as much money as possible. That Prime thing on the increasing cost doesn't surprise me at all. It's terrible the way they do it. And they manipulate and they exploit to get, because they can make millions by doing so, right? On this. They tweak one little thing that pisses off a bunch of people, sure, but it makes them millions in return.
Yeah.
So it's like one of the things they do, for example, on Prime and on Discord and on these things is they offer you, like, you can get discounts on signing up at this thing, right? It's like, oh, if I, and they're selling that to you as a benefit, okay? Whereas actually, it's an ad. They're saying to you, oh, look, guys, as part of your Prime membership, you can get 20% off at your membership at Pure Gym. But of course you can't, right? It's an advert for Pure Gym because they're paying Amazon to try and get signups, you know, at a discount. It's not actually a benefit, but they overload you with things. Discord does this all the time. They constantly try and give you free stuff, but actually it's all just adverts. Disguised as benefits. And so this is the world we live in. Okay, guys, we can't stop it. People be making money. It's like AI. Okay.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen TikTok or Instagram recently, but AI is starting to get everywhere.
Oh God, it's so
bad. And I'm realizing it's everywhere, but I'm also noticing that sometimes it's almost too good to notice. But that means it's everywhere and I'm not noticing it, right?
Right.
Like, I've heard that AAA studios are just massively using AI. And of course, why wouldn't they? If you can save time, money, paying people, you can get something done fast and get, you know, go on holiday earlier or have more days off or spend more time with your family. Why wouldn't you, right? We live in a capitalist society. The genie is out of the bottle. There's no stopping this. And if you're not using AI, you're being left behind. You can see all the excuses that these people are using to start using this stuff in their games. And it's going to be used in ways that are really interesting, like to do the to automatically do the voiceovers, and you know, so you don't need to hire the voice actors anymore. Yeah. It's going to be used to do all the animations of the mouth moving, so you don't have to do that by hand anymore. You know, it's going to be used for like so many things, and it's kind of here now. Like these next generation of AAA games coming through.
So do you think finally at long last we'll have a game where you can choose your character's name and then for the whole game they call you that? You know, like in like, you know, like it's all voice acted, but they're like,
oh yeah.
Hey, good to see you, Turbo Hot Rod 69. Welcome back. You know, like, but it's all like, it's just so slick. You know, it's there. Do you think finally we're at that point?
Is here with that. I look, I think there's always space for bespoke and skilled people, and there's always going to be people who have to code it and engineer it and tweak it and adjust it and change it and fix it, right? Like, because it's never going to be perfect. But at the same time, I think that you can skip vast amounts of faff. You know, I think in a sense, like, I reckon you can just get how has Audible not already got books on auto being read? Do you know what I mean? Like, Audible could just throw out tons of books that haven't got an audiobook version, or maybe Audible are quaking in their boots because, you know, you buy the book version and a subscription to this AI.
Isn't part of the appeal with those converter. Sometimes that like celebrities read them?
Well, you can get an AI voice of a celebrity. What are you talking about? I can get Stephen Fry to read me Lord of the Rings. I know, anything, but right? Like,
you get him on the podcast.
Right.
Well, exactly.
Oh my God, we can. And that,
we could easily.
Well, this is
that would be my dream come true.
It would be great. I'm just saying, like, that is, everyone is on a knife edge about this stuff, but it's coming, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Right.
It's like a juggernaut, like, pounding down on us. It's like nothing we can do. It's just going to change everything.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just me. I just think it's like one of these points where it's a huge change, right? The internet changed everything. And I think AI is going to be, again, a huge change.
AI feels like a really big change, for better or for worse. Like, you know, I feel like enough has changed over, say, the past 25 years, let's say. But right. AI feels really significant. Like, it's like it's a big step all of a sudden.
It's a real inflection point.
Oh, of course it is. But like, it's really doing amazing things that you can't see behind the scenes, right?
The art generation stuff kind of blows my mind.
It's real stupid. I did actually do a thing yesterday where I asked on WhatsApp, fucking Mark Zuckerberg has got Meta AI now. Yeah. You can send a message to basically it's Facebook's ChatGPT. And I asked it to come up with some roles, custom roles for Blood and the Clock Tower.
Right.
Wow. What did it come up
with? They were so bad. They were so hilariously bad. I thought we could do a little video talking through it.
Oh, okay.
But it is only a matter of time.
Yeah.
It is only a matter
of time. Bill Gates said that in like the next 10 years, it'll go nuts. I mean,
yeah.
You can believe him or not, but I mean, maybe he knows something about it. I don't know. I feel like he's probably right. I think in the next 10 years, we'll see pretty big changes to do with AI. You know, like not. It'll be a little bit
at
like
the moment, it's
similar to when
it's a copy, right?
Yeah,
it's a but it's like a shadow of reality.
Yeah,
like, it's like a garbled version. It's like someone going, "Oh, he ha, le roi du bis or pas du bis." Like, that sounds like French, but it isn't.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
that's what AI is doing at the moment.
Yeah,
it's like mimicking rather than understanding it.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, go on, Sips.
I was just going to say, it's probably a little bit like the, you know, when the first sort of automation on assembly lines started coming out, you know, it didn't start off perfect, but now, like, look at it now, it's insane. You know, the way that they make cars and the way that they make, you know, products, produce goods and stuff like that. Like, it'll be something that, it'll catch on, and then they'll just refine it, and before you know it, you just won't need people to do that kind of stuff anymore, you know.
And it's going to be surprising what gets replaced.
Yeah,
right. And what, it's not, everyone's focusing on art, but like the real stuff behind it is accounting and text, and it's weird jobs that are going to go
first. Yeah,
like,
accounting. You know, everything's going to be done digitally, the whole thing.
There won't be any more accountants?
No.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's already happening. Whoa, I've like linked my bank account to zero or whatever.
No, I'm just joking.
And they just track, they just pull everything through there and it puts it all through pretty much automatically.
Yeah.
There's always, but then again, there's always something to fix, isn't there? I think it's just anyway. Let's move on before I rant too much more about
the
falling apart of the world.
Oh, yeah. American viewers, Mother's Day is fast approaching, and you better at least make some effort to cement your reputation as the best child that your mother could possibly have had by getting her a lovely present. So why not give her an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos? And what she could also do is she can then put her old pictures onto the Aura and share them with you. So it's a really great Mother's Day gift. I gave one to my mum, I gave one to my dad. They're both very happy with them. I recommend it. So Aura frames have been named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter. And honestly, it's easy to see why. Unlimited storage. Add as many photos, videos, funny memes as you can find. Incredibly easy to set up. It's just plug it in and start sharing. And it has a great deal for Mother's Day on the Aura website right now. For a limited time, listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting auraframes.com to get $35 off and free shipping on their best-selling Carver matte frame. That's AURAframes.com, promo code TRIFORCE. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. And now, on with the show.
Remember the good old days before Microsoft Word had autosave? You'd type out an important report and then your computer would freeze and you'd lose hours of work just because you forgot to hit save?
Oh.
Well, that's what it's like going online without ExpressVPN.
That happened to me the other day.
Every time you connect to an unencrypted network in cafes, hotels, airports, etc., your online data is not secure. Any hacker on the same network can gain access and steal your personal data. Passwords, bank logins, credit card details, all of your MP3s, you name it. It doesn't take much technical knowledge to hack someone. Just some cheap hardware is needed. A smart 12-year-old could do it. Your data is valuable. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per person selling personal info on the dark web. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/triforce. That's expressvpn.com/triforce to find out how you can get up to 4 extra months free. expressvpn.com/triforce. And now on with the show.
You guys know this is a couple of little mini news stories here. First of all, Sips, you're on another podcast.
I've been on many other podcasts. Yeah, why?
SideQuest?
Yes.
What were you guys all playing games while?
While we were on there, yeah.
Huh. That's interesting.
You told us about this. Was that Jesse's podcast?
No, Bear Taffy's podcast.
Oh, Bear Taffy.
I told you about it.
You told us about that.
I don't remember. Yeah. I apologize.
Better.
The show was like you had to do stuff in games, but you couldn't do the same. You couldn't do multiple things in the same game. So like one thing was like chop down a tree, and there was three of us. So somebody could be like, oh, okay, I know what game I can play to quickly chop down a tree. And then, you know, the other two went off and did. There's like a whole list of tasks and you try to do them in a certain amount of time.
It's not like he told us. It's not like he's cheating. What are you talking about, P-Flax? What is this?
I didn't accuse him of that. I just was intrigued because I saw the Triforce subreddit and I was like, oh, this must have been, you know, maybe he was on Tough Talk with Bill Maher or something.
You're just sounding very accusatory.
No, I apologize. I didn't mean to.
Yeah, so
Have you been on any other podcast, Sips? I hope you use protection because I don't want any of those.
Where have you been?
I've been on other podcasts and I haven't told you guys about it, so I felt bad.
Oh, I told you guys about this because it was kind of relevant to the stuff that we're into and everything, and it was fun
right.
I wanted to share a fun experience, you know.
Well, try not to do
fuck
that again,
me, I guess.
You're not allowed.
Please don't.
You're ours.
Don't share positive stories with us about your life. That's no
sorry
good. So do you guys know Abby and Brittany, the conjoined twins, those two girls, American girls.
I saw a picture of them just today, actually. There was something on Reddit about them, but yeah. I didn't read it.
So here's what it was.
I did not read it.
They had to pay for two separate college tuitions, but they only received one salary from their job. How fucked up is that?
Yeah, that's fucked up.
What the fuck? Yeah. How that's not on.
Mm-hmm. Pretty bad. So here's another email. This is from Wolfgang, and he's Wolfgang a mathematician.
Amadeus, yes, a mathematician. Wow.
Okay. Yeah. He says, TLDR, I am a mathematician who also finds prime number stuff boring. And I wanted to share with you that there's actually a lot of really cool maths that the general public doesn't hear a lot about. So It's quite a long email, but I'll sum up this bit for you. First of all, the Borsuk-Ulam theorem. Have you heard of this?
No, I can't say that I have.
Okay. It tells us that there is always a spot on Earth's surface such that its exact opposite point on the other side of the world has exactly the same atmospheric pressure and temperature as itself. Always. And that point is always moving around, so you can't track it down, but it exists. They proved it mathematically that it exists.
Right.
That is weird. That is weird.
That's weird.
What are you talking about?
It's true. There are two points on exact opposite of the... So antipodal, I think it is when there are two points in precisely opposite directions from the center of the Earth. So they're absolutely opposite points on the Earth.
Do you know what I can prove mathematically? Next week, I'm going to say, did we get an email from a guy called... Wolfgang about math or something, because I'll have read it on the Reddit, because my brain has just shut down.
Okay, I gotcha.
You're saying that there's a point,
they've proven it. You can look it up.
The opposite sides at some point, some tiny minuscule point on the Earth, the
atmospheric pressure and the temperature always match of these two points.
What Mad, the eh? Fuck?
Yeah, I know. It's a really weird one.
And it moves around.
Yeah.
Just playing little pranks all the time.
Yeah. A consequence...
I don't understand how possibly be true.
So there's something called the Brewer fixed point theorem. If you stir a cup of coffee or any liquid without spilling any, no matter how much you stir, there will always be a molecule in the coffee that ends up exactly where it started before you started stirring. The same result also has the corollary that if you lay a map of your country down on the floor of your bedroom, that there is a minuscule point on the map that exactly coincides with the point that it represents in real life on your bedroom floor.
Right.
I love that.
Yeah.
You're not interested by any of this?
What the fuck?
I mean, I'm interested enough in it. So it is kind of wreaking havoc on my small, feeble mind, though.
No. That one makes sense to me, that last one. If you lay a map down and it's completely flat, i.e. every single molecule of that map is touching every single molecule of your bedroom floor, right?
Yeah.
There is somewhere one molecule where it's exactly the place on the map. Yes. That makes sense.
That does make sense. Yeah.
The coffee one, when you stir it, one molecule
will always be right back where it started.
Yeah.
That does not make sense to me either. But is that doesn't make sense to me. I don't like that. Okay. That freaks me out.
So
that makes me think we're living in a simulation.
Okay. So but I think bearing in mind that if you look into either of these theorems, who knows how, but they've proved it mathematically. And for anyone who says, oh, well, that's not the same as the real world, the final point that Wolfgang makes is that black holes, before we actually saw one, were just predicted.
I don't think I trust anything Wolfgang says now after this. So I feel like he's making this shit up.
Yeah.
You think carry on.
Violated your brain in some way.
I'm ready to be confused even more.
So they predicted the existence of black holes purely mathematically. There was no observation that they went based on. It was based. It was the mathematical understanding can often outstrip the ability to observe physical phenomena, according to Wolfgang.
It's a bit mad. I thought he was going to give me a black hole fact that it was some nonsense.
No,
because I think I can conceive of. I mean, black holes are very. Some of the stuff to do with them is crazy, like the way they warp space, time.
Yeah,
that whole thing of like going close to the speed of light and time changing. The way time is involved is very mind warping.
I think
right?
Interstellar explained it the best in a really easy to digest way with the floating library and stuff and being stuck behind the walls and everything. When I saw that I was like, you know what? I get it. Like, I can't explain it, but I get it. I don't get it. I don't know how people know any of this stuff. Like, where do you even start? Like, I think
that's exactly it. You
Wolfgang,
do start.
How you did you go, get interested you build, in this stuff? Even
you build upon it. So you start at the beginning and you work your way up, and you get, it's all layers, right? It's all layers of knowledge. You have to understand everything previous to it before you could understand it. And we're coming in at the top, being like, duh.
Yeah.
When are you telling me that when I mix my cup of tea in the morning? fine. The molecules go back to where they were.
What's a molecule?
What's a cotton-picking molecule? That's why I don't know why you went immediately for a guy that sounds like he runs a gas station.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, I don't know. Sorry, gas station runners out there. I didn't mean to offend. It's just like, I was trying to think of the easiest, like, simple folk accent that I can do
it's funny.
Prove
it's,
the point.
It is funny.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Anyway, right. Well, thanks, Wolfgang. Thanks for writing in. Food for thought. Maybe too much. It's like a buffet of thought. All you can eat. And I'm already full. But appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay. So I've got one about slot machines in pubs.
Right.
This is from someone who wants to remain anonymous,
right.
They live in Australia. This lad spends his time working in the pokies, as they're affectionately known.
The pokies, yeah.
I witnessed what can only be described as a sad, lonely helplessness of gambling addicts spinning away their entire paycheck day in, day out. Sure, sometimes a regular bar patron would go in and have a spin with their mates, but the vast majority of the turnover was from addicts, who over the course of the evening would put many thousands of dollars in and receive a couple hundred back. All studies surrounding video gaming machines point to the fact that they create gambling addicts. In fact, 84% of revenue from slot machines comes from problem gamblers, and 14% of gamblers account for 44% of all gambling revenue. They are a stain on society, and my time working in pokies has made me never want to play them in my life, and I advise all my friends to do the same. On to the stories. These are some of the lads, the people that you'd get in the pokies.
Right.
The octopus. We had one regular patron who we referred to as the octopus, and he would set himself up between three machines and play them all simultaneously in a glorious symphony of spins. Strictly speaking, this is not allowed, but our venue owner informed us not to interfere, as his $5 spins across three machines every 2.1 seconds was netting us a considerable income. The high rollers. In our venue, anyone playing $5 spins was considered a high roller. We were instructed never to charge them for drinks. Additionally, there was a small supply of party pies, sandwiches, spring rolls, etc., that were only to
party pies.
Party pies. That were only to be brought out to the gaming floor when a high roller was playing. On one occasion, a high roller won a cool $1,200.
Wow. Whoa.
It was
late.
How many party pies?
We got a high roller.
Get the bloody party pies.
Start defrosting those party pies that you cooked 3 weeks ago.
Craigie, you're down in the basement, bud. Can you break out that box of party pies? For an emergency, mate. It's an emergency. There's a bloody high roller coming.
Five Aussie dollars in at a time.
Hello, do you want to indulge in some gambling? I'm absolutely famished. We wouldn't happen to have a party pie for me.
Oh, no way. You put your fanny down on that chair and you start having fun. I'll bring you a free Castlemaine 4X. I'll get a shrimp on the barbie. We'll get a budding snag for you. Oh, it's heaven.
Oh, fiddlesticks. My monocle has popped out. I'm so excited.
I think it's gone into one of the party pies. Oh, man. Someone won 1,200. It was late in the evening and the till had run out of $50 notes.
Oh.
So in order to pay him, I just opened up the very machine he was gambling on and paid him a small chunk of his own money.
Fucking hell, that's funny.
He had just fed about $5,000 into the machine. He inquired, is all that mine? To which I replied that yes, it mostly was. And he simply said, wow. Money laundering.
Wow.
Many local drug dealers would come in with wads of cash to launder through the machines. The way it worked is this. You feed $1,000 of dirty cash into the machine. You play a $5 spin. You press the cash out button. As the cash out was above the $200 threshold for coins, a ticket is created for a manual payout from us. Collect your $995 of clean money from the cashier's station. That was quite interesting.
Wow.
Typically we're meant to report this to the gaming commission, but we had no real proof that these funds were dirty. And because they would always tip extremely well, everyone turned a blind eye. Oh, man.
That's great. I like the octopus as well. He's like... He's like an eight-year-old boy with his phone and Discord and an iPad and Switch. You know what I mean? Like all of the, like you see these kids doing like four things at once. He's just ahead of his time.
Yeah.
You know, playing four games at once. I like that.
Oh, man.
There must be loads of money laundering that goes on as well. Like,
oh, in God.
Oh, my God, tons, like that. Yeah.
Small time.
Absolutely crazy. I mean, the thing is, it's even written on the side of the machine, the payout rate. That's what gets me about these, especially these problem gamblers for fruit machines and stuff. Is it, you know, that the house has an edge in things like roulette and, you know, about everything, actually, the house has an edge. But they don't put it so blatantly on the side of the machine as they do with fruit machines, where it literally says this machine pays out at 76%, meaning that a quarter of everything you put in is gone forever and you will only ever get 75% to 76% back. So if you put £1,000 in, congratulations, you get $760 back and the rest of it stays in there. It's insane.
I think this is a false economy, though, or whatever, false thing theorem, where the idea is that you say, well, it says that you're going to lose on the side. It's like how can anyone not in their right mind decide that gambling is bad, right? It's almost like saying the same thing with smoking. It's like, you know, well, if we tell them that it causes cancer, surely they'll stop. You're appealing to their intelligence or irrationality is not why these people smoke or gamble in the first place, right? It's not a high percentage of people. It's a small percentage of people who are doing this. And they are usually people who are doing this gambling because they're desperate or lonely or sad or whatever, right? There's some underlying problem that is always going to be there. And you telling them that they're going to lose is not going to change their behavior, right? Yeah. This is why these things and these Skinner boxes of games that are, you know, free to play games that, you know, they entirely function off whales, you know, coming in and giving, you know, huge amounts of money to them. And the solution really is not just to tell people that they're going to lose their money. Although they are, it's addressing the bigger problem. And I think, yeah, it's devious and it preys on vulnerable people, and it shouldn't be allowed. They just shouldn't allow them. But I think that they're seen as a bit innocent, the pokies, right? And a bit of fun. But there's always somebody who's going to take it too far.
Yeah.
At least with the pokies, you have to go there in person. You have to actually get them physical money. You have to feed it in. The problem with the online casinos is that this stuff is happening in the comfort of people's own homes, and it's much more out of control and it's much more dangerous.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a family where the husband ran up tens of thousands of pounds worth of gambling debts, had to pay them off to the point where they had to remortgage their house. And the wife, who we know at this point, was like, right, we're taking away all your credit cards, no access to the bank account. You will literally have to come through me for all money. I mean, fucking, she stuck by him, which blows my mind. But the lad basically fucking ruined the financial future, just addicted to gambling on his phone. He's like just doing it all the time. But you see, there's loads of stories about that. It's terrible. So here's a follow-up.
I think part of it is the idea that you can win it back as well, or that somehow karma is due. You're owed a win. I think there's a lot of fallacies around this.
Oh, huge amount. The sunken cost fallacy and gambler's fallacy are pretty closely related.
People just, you know, think they're seeing patterns. They start to think they're seeing like a method, a way out. And after a certain point as well, they're like, well, I'm in this deep. I might as well throw the rest in.
I think the other thing is you are, just due to variance, going to have some really good days. And those are the ones that make you think, oh, this was just a bad day.
Yeah.
Not, oh, this is a chronically shit way of making money. And in fact, is always going to lose over the long term. It's not like even gambling on horses or you know, whatever it is you're gambling on, sports and stuff, that some people can make a living from that. They're very good at it. They're very good at spotting the odds. And
they seem, you know, so hectic, though. Like, I don't know if you ever saw that. There was a Louis Theroux where he was following a couple of people around. It was Vegas. I'm pretty sure it was Vegas.
Yes, I remember that one.
And there was one guy who was like, he'd flown in and he was like a professional gambler, and they put him in like the best suite, and he's, you know, he's got all this great food that he's got access to or whatever. And like throughout the weekend, you'd see him off and on, and it was just like, it was like he was meeting a different person every single time, but it was the same guy, because his mood would just be so drastically different all the time. You know, like sometimes he'd have won and he'd be like, you know, excited, and other times he'd be like so down because he lost a lot, and like, you know, threatening to like cut the weekend short to go home and stuff. And it's just like,
I understand that it's like addictive and some people get addicted to it and they don't have much control over that side of it or whatever, but it just seems like such a miserable way to live as well.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no, nothing's consistent, you know, like it's constantly this risk but it shows in them. They seem stressed out and kind of miserable about it, but like they just can't help themselves either.
I think, in a sense, a lot of the joy comes from the relief of either winning it back or not having lost, right? Like, I feel like it is a bit of an adrenaline junkie thing, but it's also this idea of you feel so bad I think it's a little bit like the way that when you've fallen for a scam, and we've all done it, we've all fallen for a scam and our hearts dropped and we're like, oh God, I've got ripped off, you know, on this thing. And sometimes it's a huge thing and people are like really embarrassed and don't even admit that, you know, they were scammed by someone. I think a lot of scams that aren't admitted to because you feel stupid to have fallen for it, right? Like somehow it's your fault.
Yeah.
So one of my friends actually had someone steal their session cookie for Amazon.
Wow.
And started refunding a load of their Amazon repurchases, getting gift cards. And they also had their session cookie for Steam, and they sold like their entire Steam, all their TF2 items and all their Dota items for like one penny or whatever.
Jesus.
And so, you know, it was like thousands of pounds they sort of had scanned. And they sort of rang up Amazon and were like, you know, this person's been, you know, doing it. And they were like, well, what could we do? Like, there's nothing we could do. Just, you know. But they felt really stupid about it and embarrassed about it. And it was like, well, this, you can't control this stuff. You know, it just happens sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, obviously you logged in on a PC somewhere that wasn't secure and it had some malware on it.
Yeah.
And this shit happens.
Yeah.
Like, what can you do? And I think, like, if you fall for a scam, some of them are quite complicated. And some of them look super dumb. And, like, yeah, they're designed for dumb people to fall for them. But some of them are not there. So don't feel bad. And usually there's some way to help. Like, sometimes your bank will help you if you report it soon enough.
Yeah.
You know. And that sort of stuff. So, oh God, be careful out there.
Be careful out there. Yeah, gosh, yeah.
Don't live in fear. But
there's a lot of
look after yourself.
There's a lot of nasty people out there.
And be sympathetic with people who've fallen for stuff like this as well, because it doesn't mean they're stupid. It just means
everybody makes mistakes, you know.
Yeah.
I
never do personally, but I understand that other people would, you know. Lesser mortals, I call them.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess it's really easy to do.
Oh, so Mrs. F is in Japan. I think we talked about this yesterday, right? When we recorded.
She flew off yesterday.
Yeah, so
after the podcast, you showed us
the flight path.
Sky scanner.
Yeah, exactly. Flight
Very path, interesting.
Where the plane went around a certain areas of the world that are a bit dangerous
now,
right now.
I know where she is.
Japan. Should be simple to track her down. So she's there. She's doing all right. But the jet lag is pretty rough,
right?
As you might imagine. But I'm looking forward to seeing some more pictures. She sent us 5 pictures so far of toilets.
Yes.
Like every single time she sees a toilet in Japan, she's taking a picture of it. If someone looks at her phone, they're going to think she's got some kind of a fetish for toilets. And we've got like a little family WhatsApp group and the kids are like, why are you only sending pictures of toilets? And she just replies with another picture of a toilet.
Yeah, no, they are interesting. The toilets are interesting in Japan. I can see why she would be sending pictures of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, there you go.
Well, yeah, the jet lag is rough.
It is bad.
It's bad going out.
Going east is bad, but going west is fine.
Because you're like, oh wow, it's 6 a.m. and I feel full of beans.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's not the good thing. It's more that the way you can get back on schedule is that it's much easier to stay up late and force yourself to stay up than it is to force yourself to stay asleep. Because that's always my problem is when I go east is I'm waking up at a fucking unbelievable time of day. And it's like, I have to stay awake now for basically 18 hours. And it's going to be almost impossible. Whenever I fly west, you tend to be flying into slightly earlier in the day, but not like massively earlier. So it's like maybe you'll land, you know, leave here and we've landed in the States at 5 or 6 p.m. If you can stay up till 10 or 11 or midnight, you're almost back on course. I think that's much easier.
Yes. So flying west, you can do the hard reset of I'm going to get there. I'm going to stay up, have a drink, go out. Try go to sleep around like at least 10, you know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you've got to stay up past 10. You got to.
And then you wake up at like 7 or 6 or maybe sometimes 4 or 5 in the morning. But then you've done the reset in one hard go.
Yeah. And generally you'll improve an hour a day. Like that's how pretty much how jet lag seems to. When it's nighttime, be somewhere dark. When it's daytime, be somewhere light, and your brain will make the switch. But yeah, here we go.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
She'll be all right. It's fun.
She's there for like 2 weeks, right? She'll be, once she's over it, she'll be fine.
Tips for jet lag for your wife.
Is
not going to listen to this podcast.
No, she's not. She used to, but she stopped. I don't know what the tipping point was, but she stopped listening. I think she found many other better podcasts to listen to. No offense.
That makes
no
sense.
I know.
Do you know what? I don't blame her.
I do.
I don't blame her.
I can't forgive this.
I mean, the main thing is she has to fucking listen to me record it.
I suppose.
So it's stupid for her that I go listen to it.
Yeah.
She's already heard a third of it.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So apologies.
Get over here, love. Pop your fanny down. We'll get you a party pie.
You can have a go
on the pokey.
Yeah. Have those pokies.
Welcome. So come join us.
Just as a final note, I want to apologize. Apparently I called Belfast a shithole. I apologize.
Right.
Connell.
Is it not?
Well, he says it's not.
Do you know what? I've never
remember
been there,
that time,
so I can't
remember
judge.
That time you guys were really ragging on Wisconsin?
Oh, we were. Oh, interesting. Okay.
You guys got all those emails about from people.
Is that how we remember
that's
it?
How I, yeah. Well, that's I'm pretty sure that's
how you remember. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it went down. Give or take,
fair enough.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, and of course, you know, the people pointing out that it was Barclay, not LaForge. We covered that.
Yeah,
thank
we covered
you.
It. Yeah.
Sorry
we about
can't
that.
Remember everything.
It's all right. We made a Star Trek error. I apologize. Please stop.
I still, every time I see Geordi LaForge, though, I think, what a pest, you know? My mind is just trained to view him that way. You know, and
but
I think he might even be,
so
he
lovely.
Might be innocent. Yeah. But I've just somehow I've gotten my wires crossed and, you know, it's all on him. And I don't know if I can forgive. I don't know if I can accept Geordi back into my heart. You know,
I've had an email from one person telling me how to make a risotto.
Oh,
brother.
Okay.
Brother, I've cooked more risottos than we've done podcasts. And that's a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
I don't need some lad emailing me about how to fucking make a risotto. I'm not an idiot. Thank you.
I heard today that Apple and Spotify are going to punish podcasts in the algorithm if they put numbers of episodes in the title.
Really?
Why?
I don't ask me. Ask
oh,
the
I bet I know
why
it is.
Things.
I bet I know why it is. I
Go
bet
on.
It's because if people see an episode with a high number, they think, oh, I'm not going to bother listening to all the other ones.
Oh,
and they just
maybe.
Stop.
I think that is it, yes.
And I reckon if you just put a funny title, it's going to do better. Do we still put episode numbers on our podcast?
We do.
Well, maybe we should think twice about it.
Well, I've got a business idea
about,
that's going to blow you away.
How about we stop putting numbers and just say episode and have the episode written rather than just as
well,
a number?
Well, a lot of podcast feeds, certainly the one I use, my preferred one, which is Pocket Casts.
Of course you have to do something no one's ever heard of.
They don't, they still have, you still see episode numbers, but they're not in the titles.
Huh.
Yeah.
Maybe we should think about that. I mean, especially if the bastards at Apple and Spotify are going to fuck us over for doing it, then fine.
Yeah.
That's so shit, because sometimes you really need that. Like, if it is a serial that you're watching and you need to listen to all the episodes.
We might move the episode number to the end of the title.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
Okay.
Brackets 108, right. Something like that. Yeah,
that'll probably still get us punished, but I don't care. Fuck off. Who cares? No
exactly.
one's listening to this anyway, apart
exactly.
from dedicated.
Well, Flax's wife used to listen to it, and she's left. So I mean,
well, she once.
Well, we don't want her back.
She was put off by the episode numbers. That's what she told me.
Oh,
like,
listen, there's too many episodes.
Yeah.
Listen, like, if we've already got enough problems with the jealousy situation with you being on different podcast sips, the last thing we need is to try and. Bring P Flax is like coax her back as a listener.
Well, Flax,
do you know what I mean? Like,
Flax
what
has been on
to
other podcasts as well.
And
he
bring
said,
"Bring her a party pie." What?
He said he's been on other podcasts. He just won't tell us which ones.
Well, that's because he doesn't want us to be jealous. You know, he's sensible. He's keeping it secret, his affairs. What we don't know about doesn't hurt us, Sips. I would rather live in ignorance of his multiple affairs.
Right?
You know,
sorry.
I won't tell you.
I want him to be happy.
I won't do it again.
I just want him to be happy.
Thank you. Gosh, that's such a nice sentiment.
Man.
And we want all of you to be happy too. So keep those emails coming. Thank you. I had a lot recently and I wasn't able to read them all or respond to them, but I do appreciate them all. And I do read them all. So thank you.
Yes, we do want you to be happy. And if that means correcting our mistakes, so be it. If that means stepping up on a soapbox and saying, I was wrong, I will do it. I will take that fall for you, the brave listener.
Thank you.
The kind listener.
You are such a hero. Do you know that?
He really is. Wise, he really is.
You are the bravest soldier I know.
You know, that's so kind of you. Right. You know, well, I expect the knighthood to be in the mail.
Oh, boy.
If you're listening. If you're just in King
that's
Charles.
That's how they do it, isn't it? In the mail.
In the mail. This fucking letter from the fucking king? What the fuck? What?
You open it up and it's like one of those birthday cards with a voice like animated.
You got to do the thumbnail.
You open the card.
You won't believe what I just received in the mail from the king. What the fuck? Like you got
tiny pop out. King Charles pops up and a little sword taps you on the shoulder.
You work for me now. Yes.
Oh man.
Do you reckon, you know, the people that he would have knighted in the past would have literally been soldiers like in his retinue, wouldn't they? He would have been able to summon them. Is there any law still now that means that King Charles could say, everyone's got a knighthood, get over here, we're forming a posse?
Oh yeah,
I would like
to
know.
He wants to form an impromptu posse of knights that he himself has knighted in the past, is what you're suggesting?
Yeah, I'm saying does he want to get them all together as an army and go fuck some shit up?
Well, I mean, first up,
I think the Welsh have got off too lightly. We're going to take it back. Most of them will be in their 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's be honest. It's going to be like fucking the Rotary Club.
There's some athletes
up, you know,
on
shuffling
there.
Along.
Yeah.
I think David Beckham is a knight.
Is he?
I'm pretty sure.
I don't think he's a knight. I think he's like an MBE or something like that.
Sir David Beckham?
Let me see. Career statistics. Honours. Individual.
Is he like MBE or an OBE or something?
He's an OBE.
Yeah.
That's
not
pretty
a knight.
Cool.
That's not
really.
No.
It's a British order of chivalry.
He's like part of the establishment now, but I mean he's not a knight, you know.
He's a knight. It comprises five classes of awards across both civil and military divisions, the most senior two of which make the recipient either a knight or a dame.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess he is, I don't know which fucking one he's
Wait,
got,
so but, David Beckham is a knight, but is Victoria...
Oh, he's an officer.
Is Victoria Beckham also, has she also been bestowed the same honor?
So just to say, he's not a knight.
He's an OBE.
A GBE would be a knight or dame of the Grand Cross.
Right.
A KBE or DBE would be a knight or dame commander.
Right.
CBE is commander. Officer is OBE and member is MBE. So he's just an officer. So that means, I think, that he'd be on the battlefield, but he wouldn't be in charge of much.
Right.
Yeah.
I love the thought that when we go to war, David Beckham is going to be on the battlefield somewhere doing something.
Well, no, it's not. It's going to be David Attenborough
Jason. But they would be at the back. They would be like the generals. Like they would be next to King Charles on a horse going, and he'd be like, oh, his weather's looking a bit frightful today. And David Attenborough would say, you know, something like, well, here we see the enemy forces moving to our left flank. And David Jason would say, oh, bloody hell, lads. Rodney, we better do some cavalry over there.
Rodney.
And then David Beckham would have to rally the troops. Come on, lads, follow me. We've got to go on the left flank here, go down the left wing and cut it inside. I'll kick them in the head with a football. Like that. That's the kind of army that King Charles is going to put together.
We're just sending out our best. This is the one. All hands on deck. Oh, my God.
You plonk our Beckham. Rodney. I don't know how to do a David Jason impression, but I'm sure he says Rodney a lot.
Something like that. Yeah. Oh, God. Putin should be quaking in his boots.
Yeah.
Send him in.
Send in David Jason.
Send in some.
That's a games night vid right there.
Yeah.
We put together an army.
You could deploy Lord Sugar and he can lay on a carpet bombing or something.
I've laid on this minefield, but it wasn't a good idea in hindsight. All right, let's call it there.
Yeah.
That's an hour plus
good
of mailbaggery. Thank you so much.
All
keep
right.
it coming. We'll see you guys next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.